Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where it's cold. It's just cold, and I'll tell you that. We got a great show. This is ScaryCast. I'm Dr. John Stamey. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We've got a heck of a great crew that has called in. Dr. Trey Donaway has a hall pass. He is still trying to, how can we put it? He's still trying to pack up and move out of his house. So we'll certainly give him a hall pass on that one. First of all, tonight, number one in everybody's book, the queen of ScaryCast, none other than Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin? You there?
Doesn't sound like she's there.
Oh, well, maybe she will be. Maybe something happened. Anyway, we've got from Los Angeles, or actually Hollywood, California, West Hollywood, we have the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm doing great. Enjoying a beautiful sunset here in West Hollywood, California.
Buddy, we are so jealous of you. It is just freezing in Myrtle Beach, but that's okay.
Oh.
We're just glad to have you here. And
glad to be here.
And from way up north, you have broken all barriers, Mark Johnston from Niagara Falls, Canada. How are you doing?
Good. I don't want to hear you complain about a cold night, so you come up here and hang out with me on a true Canadian winter night.
No,
I'm sure it's a lot colder up here than it is down in sunny Myrtle Beach. So.
I ain't going to do that. That is too cold for me. And right now, I think it's about 40. Let me see what it says. It says it's 41 degrees, and I am shivering. It's just, I didn't, how can I put it? I didn't sign up for this, but I guess I did. It's still not bad, and we're just glad. And is the Queen of ScaryCast with us, Robin McCray?
I could hear you guys fine, but you couldn't hear me.
Well, we can hear you now, and we are so glad you're here.
Yeah,
we've got tonight,
glad to be back.
We've got tonight one of the greatest guests of all time on ScaryCast. He's so good, we want him here every month. He is the one and only from Roswell, New Mexico, John LeMay. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm always great when I'm on ScaryCast, so I'm ready to get going.
I like that. I like that. Thank you. Thank you very much. We are so glad you're here with us. You've always got great things in entertainment, and you're an author, you're a researcher. You just do all kinds of stuff that I'm so jealous of. I need to quit my day job, and I need to start doing what you do because I know it's fun. But anyway, thank you very much for being here with us. And we are going to begin. We are all set, locked, loaded, and ready to go.
Yeah, John.
What did you say, Robin?
I was going to tell him I need to send him the UFO pictures from here.
Well, I would love those.
Yeah, we had an episode about a month ago, and it was incredible. Well, we get them here probably out of 7 days. We get UFOs probably 4 to 5 days a week. I mean, that's normal. We've had them where they flashed back and forth like they're trying to, you know, communicate, and then another one would come in and they'd flash back and forth to each other. Last week we had two times. We had one that went tree line right across from our house, and I've seen them multiple times. I had one that was just like right over my car, and I could see the whole underside of it. But about a month ago, my son-in-law had walked out on the porch, and he hollered for me to come out, and there was this enormous UFO. It was a little bit in the distance. It wasn't right on the house like most of them are. It was farther away, and you could see it spin like a top, and you could see the rectangles in the window, and they were all different colors. And then right next to it was like a sphere shape that was red dots. So he got video footage of it, and then we took and made stills from the video footage, and he did get a couple of pictures as well. And he actually, unbeknownst to me, he sent it to MUFON. And MUFON, like, just lost their minds over it. So they said they were going to do a complete investigation. And then, like, 4 or 5 days later, they contacted him and said that as far as they were concerned, it was not terrestrial, that it was a class one sighting as far as they were concerned.
And Robin, what this is Dr. John, what I will do, you sent me everything in one email, didn't you?
Oh, okay, yeah, just forward it. I think I did. Forward it to John. I enlarged some of them. Yeah, I enlarged some of them. I don't think I sent those to you, but he can enlarge them as well.
Yeah, I will send one to all of the co-hosts and Trey,
yeah.
Even though, you know, so we'll send one to everybody.
Cool.
And they
yeah.
were great. There was one picture that is absolutely spectacular. I believe.
Yeah.
In my fairly long experience of 25 years investigating UFOs, that is the best picture of a UFO I have ever seen. So, John LeMay,
yeah,
you'll
MUFON
be getting those
went crazy.
First thing in the morning, okay?
Awesome.
The other thing that's really weird,
yeah.
And, John, maybe you can tell me, LeMay. I don't know which I want to say, which John. Maybe you can give some insight on this. I've had UFOs.
Oh, sorry. I thought you just meant in general. Yeah.
No, you. I've had UFOs around me my whole life. My first abduction, I was 4. I've had them come down in the yard while I was outside, and then I've had missing time, all kinds of stuff. So anyway, we moved here to South Carolina. It didn't let up. We've had some ET encounters, that type of thing. But not only my husband and I have we seen them, but people that have been here have seen them. And I had a friend that actually woke up during the middle of the night and realized his phone was dead, and he left his charger in the car. So he walked out to the car, got it, and turned around, and there was a UFO above my garage. But my son-in-law went on Google Earth, and he was looking at the house from Google Earth. And the first time he looked at it, he saw nothing amiss, you know, on the roof or anything. He just looked at it. And about a month later, he did it again, and we had a large amount of UFOs at that time, and it looked like an emblem on our roof directly above my bedroom. And it didn't, I mean, it was bizarre. It was some weird shapes and figures. I mean, it wasn't like it said anything. It was triangles and some other things, but it looked like an emblem that was on the roof directly above my bedroom. And he came and got me, and he said, look at this. He said, it's like you're marked or something, because he said, that wasn't there when I looked at it before. I said, well, I've looked at the property on Google Earth before, and I've never seen it, but it was absolutely there. And then when he checked several weeks later, it was gone again. But when it was gone again, we were still getting UFOs, but not the concentration that we were when that thing was on the roof.
Hey, Robin, do you have any type of, like, you should get some, like, night vision or thermal or something if you're getting a lot of sightings.
Oh, I have those.
I think,
no, I
have
those.
Those.
Yeah,
cool.
In fact, my son-in-law was using them one night, and there was a little ET that was standing across the road. And I actually walked towards it, and he was, like, freaking out. Don't do it, don't do it. But I didn't get a bad vibe off of them. Like, I've had bad ones come before. And they're not, trust me when I tell you, they're not coming back. But that one was fine, and I got probably 30, 40 feet before it turned and ran into the woods. It was like, it wasn't very big, and it was more of a whitish color. It wasn't one of the little grays. It wasn't one of the Zetas. But, yeah, you can pick them up on the thermal. The ships you can get on the thermal, too. If you, like, if you're looking up at the sky and you can't really see them, and then you put them on that thermal, they show up. But I don't know what the deal is lately. We've had, like, in the last week and then the week prior, it's a disc, but it's bright, like a bright light, and it comes and it skims right directly above the tree line in front of my house. And it just, it goes at lightning speed. And then guaranteed every time it does, within 30 minutes, we've got helicopters over the house and over the woods across the road.
Crazy.
That's pretty conspiracy theory stuff. That's great. We deal in conspiracy theories here. We talk about them all the time because, Robin, you and me and Mark and Devin and John LeMay know that sometimes conspiracy theories are true. Is that correct?
99.9% of the time.
Yeah. Sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, right? Conspiracy fact, right?
You know, I always said, and not just with the ETs and the UFOs, but with the cryptids, and especially the cryptids and the paranormal stuff, you know, what's been created that everybody thinks our world is never, ever existed. It's all a fantasy. It's an illusion. It's what was created and told to us and preached to us to get us to believe it. What's happening now is all of these things are coming to the front burner, and people are finding out that we've been lied to all along. You know, our minds were trained to never see these things because we were told they didn't exist. And they're making themselves loud and proud now so that people don't have a choice but to realize that, you know, not only were we lied to, but the world we had was not true.
Yeah, perhaps we're being like acclimatized and conditioned to this exposure or ET revelations. It's not just going to be like a one-time kind of thing where we go from first gear to fourth. Maybe it's like a process, right, for public to accept it through cultural things or whatever else, right? And
Well, I had briefly touched, and this last time to think, because I want to hear what John has to say. But I had gotten contacted 9-10 months ago, and I was given a message from the ETs on what I was supposed to put out there, and it was basically on how they abduct and take possession of people. And they said, you know, people are going to laugh at you. They're not going to believe you, but you have to, you know, no matter what, you got to get this out there so people know. Never have I found a platform to do it yet because, quite honestly, people aren't ready to hear what they said. But what they told me coincided with what I knew about it.
If you wouldn't mind, we've got two shows scheduled. We've got our Valentine's Day show scheduled with Jen Cruz and you. You two are our Valentines. And then we've got Scott Dills from the New Hanover Tavern, ghost hunt, paranormal stuff. He's going to come back. He was just a really wonderful guest. So maybe on February the 28th, which is an auspicious day for me, a very important day, and I need to get through February 28th. But we might just have you on to relay all that information. Would that be okay?
Yeah, like I said, I think it's going to be a lot for people to take. I'm not quite certain that our people are ready for it yet, but the truth is the truth. You can't change it.
Everything that
I was told backed up what I've learned through my lifetime and experiences with them. So that really freaked me out because it was like, it's one thing to suspect something, but it's another to hear it from the horse's mouth, you know?
That's right. The horse is a lot more personal than anything else you'll get. So that'll be great, and we'll be glad to have you doing that. And I'll be able to announce on that date the reissue of Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies. I'm adding one story. I'm taking a couple things out, and we're going to have a new book. And then I am pleased to say, John LeMay, before I get you started, can I tell people what you're helping me with?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Well, John LeMay graciously offered to help me format The Lizard Man Companion, the new book. It is finished. It's, in my opinion, it is the equivalent of a doctoral dissertation. I have written one. I know what a doctoral dissertation is, and I am so proud of it. And, I mean, I couldn't be any happier that the renowned author, John LeMay, is helping me get put together. It's truly
sounds like
an
it's
awesome
going to be
experience.
Fabulous. I can't wait to read it.
Well, I believe it will be, and we're going to be doing, now believe it or not, we're going to be doing the initial book signing at Five Points in Columbia at Blue Tile Skateboards, the hoppinest, coolest skateboard shop on the East Coast, and he is down there on Five Points. Dave Blue Tile said he would love to have us come in and set up, and we'll have, I hope Robin will be there, I hope Trey will be there. I hope Susan Green, the greatest lady wrestler of all time. She's already committed. She said, I don't care what day it is, I'm going to be there. I said, okay, good. Thank you, Susan. So we're going to have all the stars and the superstars, and I will say that we are engineering the Lizard Man Festival for November 12th. And that is going to be starring, of all people, Lyle Blackburn and John LeMay. We're going to get John out of Roswell. We're going to get John out of Roswell. He's going to come experience some real South Carolina hospitality. So, John, it'll be wonderful having you here. And we'll have two Lizard Man books, well, two and a half, because I'm adding actually two stories to Look Up in the Sky. One is an Indian creation story that thunder came from the Lizard Man. And I can't wait to put that story in the book. It is going to be – it didn't need to go in the Lizard Man Companion. That is a general statement of faith of some Indians in California, and I just thought it was best to put it in, and that's the real reason I want to reissue Volume 2 or second edition, because I think it's very important, and I don't even know how I found it, but I sure did. Anyway, John LeMay, Disappearances, Why Are We Here Tonight?
Well, I've got a story from Mark's neck of the woods all the way up in Canada. It's pretty rare that you'll find a UFO story from 1930s Canada. And I don't know much about Canada. Maybe Mark can help tell us if he's even heard of this place or knows where it is. And I've only seen it spelled out. I've never heard it pronounced. But it looks like you say it Anjikuni Lake in Nunavut, Canada.
Yeah.
I might
in Nunavut.
Have you heard of that, Mark?
Yeah, Nunavut is we have a lot of provinces. That's what we call states. But then we also have these territories, which are in the Arctic territories. And Nunavut is part of the kind of Arctic territory. So that's where the Inuit would be. And that's where it's very cold, obviously even more so cold than where I'm at, way up there, way up north.
Mark,
is it
cold
enough on the map,
beach
yeah.
at 41 degrees? Come on.
Yeah. That's cool, though. So tell us about the story.
Okay, you know me, I can never remember what I've written, and so this comes from a book, one of Noe and I's UFO history books we're doing on the 1930s, and it hadn't even come out yet, so it'll be brand new. But it's a story about a whole village of Inuit peoples who disappeared, and I'm just going to kind of have to read it because I can't remember any more of the details if I don't look at them. Even though I wrote the chapter, I can't remember unless I look at it, so... our story begins in late November of 1930 with a trapper named Joe LaBelle. He was on his way to a small Inuit village he had visited before near Anjikuni Lake. And to his shock, when he got there, he found that this small village, which usually had about 25 people in it, was completely deserted. At first, he saw it from a distance, and he thought, everybody was just inside their tents. But he couldn't really see any fires going or anything like that, which was odd. So he crept closer and closer to this village, and he started to look inside the tents. And he couldn't find anybody inside any of the tents. And he did find that they had left all of their possessions there, and that included their food and their guns. So, common sense told him that if they had picked up to move away permanently, they wouldn't leave their food, and they sure wouldn't leave their guns. So he, started to suspect that, maybe something bad had happened, but he didn't know what yet. And now I'm going to quote what LaBelle said in the article that appeared back in 1930. He said, "I felt immediately that something was wrong. In view of half-cooked dishes, I knew they had been disturbed during the preparation of dinner. In every cabin, I found a rifle leaning beside the door, and no Eskimo goes nowhere without his gun. I understood that something terrible had happened." So, again, it seemed like they left in a hurry. But, years later, people started to think, well, maybe they didn't leave. Maybe they were taken. And what kind of indicates that maybe they literally just disappeared from the face of the earth as LaBelle, you know, naturally, you know, LaBelle, that's the name of the prospector I was talking about. He naturally thought to himself, well, let's go out and look for footprints or tracks, you know, leading away from the village. And he went and he couldn't find any. And I guess up there you could argue that maybe the snow had fallen and filled them all in. But still, though, when he went out, he found some of the tribe's dogs. They were about 300 yards from the village, and they were just out there by themselves, which was another weird thing. Most of them had starved to death. And, LaBelle, he didn't know what to think. I'm kind of going through my chapter here, jogging my memory. So LaBelle, he walked all the way to Churchill, and he reported this disturbing find to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police over a telegraph. And once he got their attention, they returned with him to the spot, and LaBelle was able to lead them there. So they did find, the Mounties did get to observe the deserted village for themselves. And I can't remember where this information comes from, but the Mounties were said to observe pulsating bluish lights on the horizon of the village. So that was kind of one of the first indications that maybe, you know, UFOs and aliens could have been involved. But again, so this story, for many years, people thought maybe the story was a hoax because most people would see it in books on UFOs, and they didn't see the actual newspaper article from 1930. And because they couldn't see it, they just started to say, well, maybe these authors just made up this story, and then one author copied it into his book and so on. But in more recent years, they have found this article, and it was for a fact. Published on November 28th, 1930 in the La Paz, Manitoba newspaper. And if you dig around yourself, you can probably find it on Newspaper Archive or newspaper.com. So it is a real article. You know, I've seen the screenshots of it. So it got a lot of attention. And there seemed to be kind of a cover-up on the part of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police because they would try to say that it never happened, and they released a statement. And their official statement from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, I think this was back in the 1980s or something, they said the story about the disappearance in the 1930s of an Inuit village near... Sorry, I dropped my phone for a second. Okay, an Inuit village near Lake Anjikuni is not true. An American author by the name of Frank Edwards is purported to have started this story in his book Stranger Than Science. It has become a popular piece of journalism, repeatedly published and referred to in books and magazines. There is no evidence, however, to support such a story. A village with such a large population would not have existed in such a remote area of the Northwest Territories. Furthermore, the Mounted Police who patrolled the area recorded no untoward events of any kind, and neither did local trappers or missionaries. But, you know, again, that statement's wrong because there really was a newspaper article. And of all people who investigated this story was the famous abductee, Betty Hill, you know, Barney and Betty Hill. And what happened was in the late 1970s, Betty Hill was on a cruise, and she met a guy from... the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. She said his name was Captain Larson. And because he had met her, you know, he knew her from the realm of UFOs. And they were talking about UFOs. And this Captain Larson brought up to Betty Hill the story of the Anjikuni Lake disappearance. And this guy said, in his opinion, that the disappearance was the result of a mass alien abduction. So you have it from one of the Mounties themselves to Betty Hill, which is pretty incredible. But that's just the story, though.
I mean, that's amazing. And I'll say this, and this will probably be the most controversial statement I have ever made. The Book of John in the New Testament was written 100 years after the death of Christ, and that is one of the most revered and respected writings on the life of Christ. And you can't tell me that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police
know anything from 50 years ago. Now, John, do you have a copy of their retraction or their statement?
No, I mean, just the one that I had read just a few minutes ago, and that's it.
Well, I mean, that is stunning, and that borders on stupid. Sorry. Because you got to
Well, if I can interject here for a second, guys.
Yes, sir.
If I can interject here for a second. I don't want to be, like, too much of a skeptic here, but just the one thing that comes to mind as a possibility, and I've had friends who are from Inuit descent, is there's a lot of bad blood between tribes up there. The only thing of a full-on tribe just disappearing is a potential conflict with other neighboring tribes, such as the Cree down south. They had their own wars over the year. Although 1930s, I would think that would be a bit too late for that to happen. But I'm just going to throw that out there as a possibility when you think about tribal disappearances happening. But in this case, to be honest, I don't think so. I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right. Now, my next question goes to Robin McRae. Robin, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you get, if I may ask you to, what do you get about this event?
Oh, they were totally taken. 100%.
Okay.
I'm just saying that. I can't, right off the top of my head, I can't even begin to tell you where it was at. I think it was in California, but I'm probably wrong. There was another episode where, and it wasn't Native Americans, but it was a group of people. They lived way up in the rocks on the side of a mountain. Their whole entire village was up there. Everything they did was up there. They very seldom did they leave it. And they literally disappeared. And there was, that had happened, I don't know, hundreds of years ago, but there was a gentleman and his wife that had stopped there because it was almost like a tourist attraction where you could walk up there to the different levels. And a gentleman walked up there, told his wife he'd be back in like 10 minutes. He was going to go to the lower level. He went in there and decided to go to the upper level, which happened to be where this tribe of people lived and disappeared. And there was over 1,000 of them, and they just disappeared and vanished. There's no trace of them, no remains, no nothing. And so he decided he would go to that second level. And they actually have a picture of somebody that encountered him, and a girl was taking a photo, and it wasn't intentionally of him, but he was actually in the photo because he was standing there. So they have proof he made it to the second level. To this day, they've never seen or heard from him again. And they believe, and I firmly believe it as well, that there was some type of a portal that was there. And they literally went into this portal. And I tried to connect with this man. And when I did, he was there with these little tiny ETs. I mean, they weren't the Zetas. They were little. And he was there, and they were like all around. It was really weird. But it was very bizarre to me because they went and they did some testing in the area, and they found what they believed to be a portal there up in those rocks. You know, I mean,
okay,
I think
now,
that's happened
now,
a lot more than we realize.
What is the location, as best you can determine, of this place?
I'm trying to remember. I saw it a couple of years ago on TV. Yeah, it was on,
okay.
I believe, David. Wasn't on David Pilates?
No,
it wasn't David.
Yeah,
it was called Vanished.
David Pilates.
It was called Vanished. Yeah, it wasn't on David's. It was No, it wasn't on David's. I was just asking Pat if he remembered. Yeah, they had David Pilates was in it, but he had gone up in the mountains with somebody in Mount Shasta, but that had something different. The guy that disappeared, they used to call him the walking man because he walked everywhere. It was just really incredible, and it really resonated with me because if you go back and you look through the course of time, there is multiple places where entire groups of people have simply vanished. There's never found any remains. They have left, you know, any firearms or anything that would have protected them or whatever, and they're all gone at the same time. Realistically, entire groups of people do not vanish together. They don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, you know what, let's get all of us together. We're just going to pop out of here. It doesn't work that way. And they never found any path of travel had they decided they were going to leave. And so I've always found that very, you know, telling. I mean, if there's no path of travel, there's nowhere where people can determine that they've left. If you can't go out on the ground, there's only one place left to go, and that's up, you know. And then we've seen and heard so many different stories of people with abductions, you know. I mean, look at Travis Walton. You know, I mean, these things actually happen, and I think it's really hard for people to believe it because it's one of those things where unless it happens to them, they don't want to believe it because we've been programmed to believe those things don't happen. But the reality is that they do, and it happens to hundreds of thousands of people a year. Not all of them are reported. So I don't believe in my heart of hearts that it's that far-fetched to think that an entire tribe could be taken like that, because I think that's happened probably more than we ever realized.
So if I can interject here, you know, being in Canada, obviously Inuit are a big part of our peoples, and there's a lot of history involvement in Canada. And I always knew about their connection with the stars and things like that, and their own folklore. They're kind of being isolated. They kind of had their own legends and everything. And I was just curious about it while you guys were talking. And I looked in Inuit folklore, and apparently there's all these supernatural beings that they talk about called Mahana, which are a demon that terrorizes the Arctic and apparently tickles its victims to death. And there's that these shapeshifters that change into Arctic animals and disguise themselves. So I'm just reading upon that now because I know that they have their own very unique kind of folklore being way up there, and they're very tied into stars such as star maps and that type of thing as well. And being like the Northern Lights up there too, which is kind of, you can think of a supernatural phenomenon. So I'm just throwing that out there, maybe to check out some of the folklore that's involved with that, because just like, you know, John, like down in the States there, that there's folklore involved in the States in some of these areas that might hold some validity.
But, oh my God, yeah, I'm sitting here, and you know, I'm sitting here in the middle of the Boohags and the Haints and the Witches. I am right next to Pawleys Island, and that is where it all happens. And I'm telling you, man, you talk, oh my God, you talk about folklore. We've got it right here where I live. I think that's why I live here. Okay. Yes, Robin?
Well, I mean, not only does this happen to our people, but it also happens to the cryptids. I mean, and they're very vocal about it. There are factions of ETs or star people or whatever you want to call them that they are very fearful of. They have some that they get all excited about and they're perfectly fine with, but there are some that actually hunt them and take multiple of their people. I mean, it happens. Like, I never realized that was an issue or a problem. And we had, when I lived in Michigan, we had a UFO that came down in the back of our field. And they were terrified. They were absolutely petrified. Excuse me. And I asked them why they were so terrified. And they said, because they're coming for us. And it's like this, you know, it's not just our people they're taking. They're taking the cryptids. They're taking all kinds of stuff. And then you have to look and see all the genetic mutations they've created. I mean, this is a real thing. I mean, it happens. There are so many people with disappearance. I went to Pennsylvania to do some work with cryptids there. And while I was there, there was a sign on the side of the road. And, you know, if you go various places, you know, you'll see the crosses or flowers or whatever on the side of the road that people will put up for their loved ones that might have been in an accident of some kind. Only this one looked very odd to me. And I can't remember exactly what it said on it, but it didn't make any sense. And the person I was with, I said to her, I said, you know, what is that? And she said, because there was a UFO that literally pulled somebody out of their car, up in the air, and just basically shredded them. And everybody saw it. You know, it wasn't hidden. It was in broad daylight. You know, this stuff is real. It happens. If you're taken and you make it back, God bless you. Because a lot of people don't.
So I'm just reading further on this topic of Inuit folklore. And apparently there's something called the Taktarikisit, which are shadow people who are rarely seen but often heard, the Kalupiluk, scaly human-like creatures that snatch children into the sea, Inupasukluk, giants who capture humans, and Tunuit, who are seen as simple-minded but extremely strong ancestors to Inuit. So even just in this thing that I'm reading here, it seems like there is, in their folklore, some supernatural beings that are involved with kidnapping, which is kind of interesting because that corresponds to what John's talking about with potentially what's happening here. And if what they're describing is something that's ET-like, well, there could very well be a correspondence there.
Right. Devin, are you still with us? I see that you are, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Devin.
Okay.
Hey, Robin.
I have had experience in my research where I have found strange things at Mount Shasta. I have found disappearances, just too many disappearances for the public good. I'll just say that. Do you know of any other places?
One...
I'm sorry, are you talking about the hunter that went on ahead of his wife and he vanished?
No, the one I was thinking of, he wasn't with his wife. He was with a friend. He went every year with a group of people. And he literally walked ahead of them because he had to get to the next point because he had to take medication or whatever it was. But it was a straight shot. It was open area where they could physically see him, you know, and he left just a short time before they did. Well, they packed up the rest of the camp. There wasn't woods. There wasn't anything. It was just a straight shot up the mountain in open country. And he never made it to the point. He never made it there was like a check-in point he was walking to. He never made it there. And
you see that is terrifying.
Yeah, and they saw where his footprints were. And it got halfway up there, and then there were no footprints in the snow. There was no other tracks in the snow.
Uh-huh.
There was no tracks of anything anywhere. His came to a dead stop.
And
they never found his belongings or him.
What you are describing is straight out of Ambrose Bierce's most famous short story. It's only one page long. And it's called The Problem with Crossing a Field. And there was a farmer we've got it on Sorcerer's Dictionary. I mean, everybody can, The Problem with Crossing a Field by Ambrose Bierce. It's one of the most, I mean, it's about as terrifying as Who Goes There by John Campbell, which is the basis for Thing from Another World, all three of those movies. But it is terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's just frightening because when you look at all of the information all over the world, it's not like it's in just one state or one country. This happens all over the world. People just completely vanish, like they were never there to begin with. And it's frightening. I mean, it could happen to you. You could walk out to the mailbox, never come back. You know, I mean,
well,
I know it sounds crazy, but it really is frightening.
Well, I want to make an announcement, Robin, is that Robin now has my address. So if she ever doesn't hear from me by the end of the day, she better be trying to
I'm
call me
I'm sending out
morning.
The National Guard.
That
the National
exactly
Guard
right.
would be called.
We do not know.
I've got it saved.
Good. You ought to probably write it down, too, just because it's
I have it screen captured. I have it saved. I'm not losing it.
That's right. That's right. That's good. And in fact, I probably need to send it to all of the Scarycast co-hosts because y'all are the best friends I've ever had. and John LeMay. In fact, I've got John LeMay's address right here. And John, when you sent me a couple of books, I took out your address and I put it in the 1919 book, which you kindly dedicated to me, because I sure didn't want to ever lose John LeMay's address. You know, that's one of the more important addresses. It's about like rock. It's like all the addresses of all the great Scary Cast co-hosts. But anyway, Devin, I wanted to ask you something. You have done a lot of research. You've got a magnificent. Oh, John LeMay, did you look at Devin's documentary?
Yes, I finally had the pleasure of watching it, and it helped me finally finish my chapter on the underground lizard people, so thank you. Yeah, that's going to be in the same
awesome.
Book as this. Yeah, same book
I
as the thing
that.
We talked about.
I
want
to see that. I didn't realize
about,
it was done.
Yeah. I mean, it is like one of the best documentaries I have ever seen.
John, do you have it? You can send it to me?
Yeah, I've got the link from Devin. I'll send it. Along with the other stuff I'm going to send, I'll send that link to all the ScaryCast hosts. And
please do.
Oh, absolutely, I will. Because here's the deal about that one. I said, Devin, you do videos. Why don't you do a documentary on the lizard people of Los Angeles? And oh, my God, did he ever do it? Devin, did you ever do a documentary? It was incredible. I mean, it's like.
Thank you.
You're the quiet one of the group, and you've got absolutely more talent than so many of us have in so many ways.
Yeah.
It was incredible. But anyway, Devin, I was going to ask you, and it may be a non-answer, but I was going to ask you, do you know of any places in California where people have vanished other than Mount Shasta?
Well,
I mean, we know they vanished on Mount Shasta. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I don't know any, like, you know, places that people, you know, have stories about like that in particular. I do have a story of, like, a group disappearance from L.A., which happened just a couple of years before I moved here, actually, back in 1998. I don't know if you know the writer Carlos Castaneda. He was kind of considered like the godfather of New Age, and he had a book called
Carlos Castaneda is one of the greatest writers. I've got three of his books sitting on my bookshelf right now. I love the guy.
So do you know what happened after he passed away?
No.
So he had a group of disciples or students or whatever you want to call them. They were all women, pretty much. And they were kind of known as the witches of Castaneda. He called them his witches. And they lived with him in his kind of compound that they lived in Westwood. And after he passed away, within days, all five of them just disappeared, vanished. And they've only ever found one of them. They found her body up in Death Valley. They couldn't determine the cause of death. People might speculate that it's suicide, but frankly, there's no evidence of any kind. But the other four have just completely disappeared, never been located.
Oh, my God. That's a lot like, I don't know if everybody on this podcast remembers the movie Season of the Witch. Does anybody remember that movie? The quietest anyone's ever gotten.
I don't think so.
I don't remember it at all.
You need to watch Season of the Witch. Donovan, the great singer Donovan, did the song Season of the Witch. It was a number one hit back in the 60s in the UK. And you need to watch Season of the Witch. It is an incredible film. It is one of those films that should have gotten nominated for an Academy Award, but it was probably a little too controversial. You know, it's kind of like the stuff I do with sorcerer Jason McClendon and our Introduction to Sorcery book. I mean, it's like whenever I tell people that the book's coming out, their eyes just roll their eyes back in their head. They say, oh, God, what is that? I mean, you know what it is, and he told me today. It looks like absolutely Eastern Orthodox Church.
the Eastern Orthodox Church is a carbon copy of what we have in Introduction to Sorcery, and I'm not embarrassed to sell it. I think it's actually a pretty fine book, and I learned a lot doing it, and it's okay. It's in a way, now Robin, don't be scared. In a way, it's like a grimoire, which is a book of spells, but there are no spells in it. We just explained what this stuff is, and I think there are a lot of people that really don't know what sorcery is. And if you're a white sorcerer like Jason McClendon is from Cullman, Alabama, it's not going to hurt you. I mean, it's not. It's about how do they do things, who do they call upon, nature spirits. It explains all that. And it's interesting. It's intellectual. And that's why I like it. It's nothing bad because I don't do bad things. But anyway, yes, Devin, first of all, thank you so much for telling us about Castaneda's witches. I'm going to write that down because I need to find, is there an article like in the LA Times about this?
Yeah, I think there's a few actually. I can send you a few links, and it's definitely something I would like to explore further with all of your help.
Well, you've got it. And you know what? We might just add this to Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, second edition. We might just add this because this is like, and we'll attribute the idea of disappearances to John LeMay, who introduced us to disappearances on ScaryCast. Is that all right, John?
Oh, well, there's plenty of disappearances before I ever brought them up, but. But sure.
No. You're our guru on disappearances because you've got the Inuit disappearance, and you've made me mad about what came out 50 years later and all that stuff. So you made me mad in a good and intellectual way. So I'll say that. And so I would say that Robin, in her way of looking at things, which is remote viewing, she just said they were taken. They vanished. Right, Robin?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, John, can I interject here for a sec?
They didn't stay here. Let me tell you.
Yeah, so I was just researching a few things. One called the Alaskan Triangle. Have you ever heard of that, John? It's like the Bermuda Triangle of the Arctic, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So another.
Tell us a little bit about it.
I'm just reading about it now.
I don't know anything about it. And I think it's a fairly spectacular idea, especially with so many people vanishing in the Alaskan Triangle. So please tell us.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it now on the map, and it's not really around where he was talking about, but nonetheless, it's still up there. I'm just reading about it now because it's in Alaska. That's obviously the United States, not Canada. But just in like the first two or three sentences, it's saying many of the reports of missing people are centered here as well, which have something possible to do with cryptids that supposedly roam here. So, you know, there seems to be like some folklore or something going on here. And I know based on where I was in BC, obviously that's a big Bigfoot area. And even like a lot of Native friends whose families go way back there, and they were very in tune with the fact that there was cryptids there, Bigfoot, and that was the area where I saw what I saw, whatever that was. So I don't know if it's Bigfoot. And in this area, too, there's a lot of missing people just in general. They've attributed that to just like hitchhikers picking them up and, you know, kidnapping them. But you never know what's going on up there, whether it's something ET or cryptid in general. Potentially there is something going on here, and everything I'm looking at here based on it, there seems to be disappearances. So there's a reoccurrence here with that.
I'm going to say this. There are not many Jeffrey Dahmers in the world. And, you know, there aren't many dudes that'll pick up dudes and off them. I mean, it just, you know, thank God it just doesn't happen. I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer was one of a kind for sure, because we used to do a show called Murder 1-2-3 until it just got too grisly for me. You remember that, Robin?
Oh, yeah.
And it just got too grisly and too dark for me. I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yep.
But I mean, there aren't that many Jeffrey Dahmers. So otherwise, where did they go? As they say up in the Appalachians, where did they go? Well, you know, we can probably hypothesize on Scarycast exactly where they went, because the king of paranormal authorship, John LeMay, has brought to our attention the idea of disappearances. And I want to mention four disappearances. One's explained, three are absolutely not. First of all, the Mary Celeste. Has anyone ever heard, John LeMay, have you ever heard of the Mary Celeste?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. It was a ship. And somewhere about 30 days after it sailed from New York on its way to Genoa, Italy, and it had denatured alcohol, which is a great way to get yourself screwed up. I mean, that'll mess you up. I mean, oh, my God. And so about a month after it sailed, they found it, and it was just sailing by itself, just drifting toward Portugal. And just an amazing thing, the Mary Celeste, and I think the consensus is today we can probably attribute it to the crew getting extremely drunk and extremely violent. Now, John LeMay, I know you're a little familiar. Does that even sound like an appropriate conclusion?
I don't know. I would think if that's what happened, there'd be bodies all over the ship, but there was no bodies on there, right?
That is correct. There were no bodies. There was a little bit of blood.
Say, yeah. Hmm. Well, the blood.
I'll just say that maybe there's enough evidence that was the case, that it was the crew. They got extremely drunk and messed up on denatured alcohol, which is what we call ethanol, and you can drink it, and it won't kill you, but it'll just about kill you, and it'll mess your mind up. So, I mean, I think there's enough evidence that may have happened, but I'll just say that. But now we get – let me go down here on my notes because I made copious notes. Malaysian Airline Flight 370. Does anybody remember – John LeMay, do you remember Malaysian Flight 370?
Yes. What made that even creepier is when I saw that on the news, I was in a big airport, like sitting there waiting on my next flight, having a drink, and that's where I saw that.
You're saying, oh,
that was unbelievable.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, now I've got a story to share that I have never shared on Scarycast or anywhere. And I'm pleased to share it because this is – you talk about the truth, this is the truth. I'm sitting there at a fundraiser with Dr. Sally Ryan Feather, who is J.B. Ryan's daughter. And there was a psychic comedian. He was kind of funny. And he said, what's the biggest question you've got? And someone raised their hand and said, Malaysian Flight 370. And all of a sudden, at the table to the right of me, and I then realized I'm sitting next to Sally Ryan Feather, I said, oh, my God, I'm sitting next to the lady whose dad invented the name ESP, and that man must be Joe McMonagle, who is considered the greatest remote viewer in the world now that Ingo Swann has passed away. And he was very good friends with Ingo Swann. And what he did is he smiled at me, and he shot me an image of the Saigon River. And he colored it red and white like a peppermint stick. And he put a star right next to it in Cambodia. And believe it or not, where do you think that years later, where do you think that they found
Malaysian Flight 370, John LeMay.
Right where you said.
Exactly. And that was unbelievable. It was like the most vulgar display of remote viewing. Robin, you know how it is when you do remote viewing and all of a sudden you just see something and you can't help it, but you see it, correct?
Exactly.
And
a lot of times
McMahon,
you don't even understand it. You just know you have, that's what you see.
Right, but he shot me an image into my head, and I will never forget that image because Saigon means snake. It's the Snake River.
Mm.
And it was incredible. It was one of the most incredible moments I have ever had. And I knew where Flight 370 was. It was in Cambodia. Now, why it was in Cambodia, I don't know. Now, what they say, the conspiracy theorists want to say that it was in Diego Garcia. Now, do y'all know what Diego Garcia is?
No.
Mm-mm.
That is the most secret CIA stronghold in the world, and it is an atoll, and it is in the Indian Ocean, and you can't get within 1,000 miles of it, or you're going to be dead. It's a terrifying place. I've read stories about people who've been captured in Diego Garcia, and they've been released. And they said it was one of the most frightening experiences they ever had. That is the American CIA. It's about like, what's the place in Cuba?
Guantanamo Bay?
Guantanamo Bay, that's right. It's about like our other side of the world, Guantanamo Bay. But it is terrifying. Now, I really do hope the men in black don't come get me. I mean, I really don't. But Malaysian Flight 370 landed in Cambodia, and then of course I had David Pilates, because David has done a lot of research on what has happened with people that have disappeared. Now, some people say, well, people just disappear. But David Pilates, now Robin, you know a bit about him. Do you care to offer any opinions or whatever about David Pilates?
Well, you know, he used to be a detective, and I'm sure he has great resources from that. But, you know, he's very thorough. He is extremely thorough with the information that he gets. You know, I will say that. And I think, you know, he does a really extraordinary job of getting all the facts.
Okay, thank you. I mean, because I've read a lot of bad things about David Pilates, and I always kind of thought that he did a good job. So you let me know that, and thank you. So just, you know, he's another guy that deals with disappearances. But then the one that Scary Cast spent 2 weeks on, the Dyatlov Pass up there in the Ural Mountains in Russia, where it was freezing cold. And
what they claim went on in there, and different information that I got, it's not the information that I was given was from people that had a little bit more inside info. And I think there's a lot of discrepancies. I think, you know, a lot of people just kind of blew it off and said, you know, the Bigfoot did it because they did see one. They said, you know, the snowman lives. They wrote it in that notebook. And they did find tracks from one around there, you know. And I think a lot of people have the beliefs that that's what did it. And I, you know, my own personal opinion, be that what it may, it had nothing to do with it. Were they there? Yeah. But that they weren't the ones that did it.
Well, my opinion is maybe like your opinion is that was ETs.
Oh, 100%. I mean, to begin with, KGB came in. Okay, there were lights in the sky. There had been lights in the sky, and UFOs spotted in the sky in that area for 3 days, I think 3 or 4 days prior. And there was people that had reported seeing lights in the sky that night that all that happened. Then the KGB came in. And once you really get into that and you dig deep and try to get more information, there were boot covers from the KGB that were found there, indicating they were all over that site area where the hikers were, where the camp was, and where they were found. Okay, if these kids are in a tent and, you know, and they obviously saw what they believed to be the snowman, because they wrote it in the book and they said the snowman lives. And then there were slices in the tent where they were peeking out. Do I believe that they saw them there? 110%, because you're talking about they're going way up in the mountains where the Yetis are, or excuse me, the snowman or whatever you want to call them, Bigfoot, whatever. And you're now in their area, and it's an area that most people aren't there. I guarantee you they were there to find out why they were there. And I'm sure they were screaming and hollering and carrying on. That doesn't mean they killed anybody. But something happened to make these people leave a tent without shoes, without, you know, the proper clothing or whatever. And I don't believe that it was the foots that did it. I do see some tendencies, like when they said that the one person they found dead, the ribs were crushed. That is something that if a Bigfoot were to do it, they would squeeze them and it would crush their ribs. However, what to me says it wasn't them was the tongue was removed. That's not a normal thing for them. Okay, then it said the eyes. There was a situation with the eyes. That was not normal for them either. And then you get to the fact where there was radiation all over that ground. Now, the Bigfoots have a different energy. They have a different vibration. They don't have radiation. What do you normally find that has radiation residue afterwards? UFOs and ETs.
UFOs.
So I just think that there were so many things. And the other thing I saw, too, they did a documentary on it. And after I watched it, I talked to my personal sources that had information on it. But the second documentary they did on it, they went to go into the negatives. They had in this vault the negatives from the hikers' cameras that they recovered. And in it was apparently some really pertinent information. And when this new documentary team went in to look for that, suddenly they were gone. All the other portions of the films were there, but the negatives to the most important part had vanished, which means there's a cover-up going on. You know,
well,
so
I mean,
there's just too much information that didn't make sense.
Robin, I'll tell you something, and I want to reiterate this to everybody on this podcast, is you go out to find the police reports for the lizard man, they don't exist.
Yep.
They're gone. And now that I've got this great thing, the Sydney Monsters up in Tabor City, which was a gigantic deal in 1973. John LeMay, do you think the police reports are still around for the Sydney Monsters? What do you think?
Almost say no.
Yeah, I would say doubtful.
And
wow.
I am going
see, whenever
to
you
announce
get them. Into yeah, whenever you get into these hard topics like the ETs, the lizard man, the Bigfoot, UFOs, whatever, what is the common denominator? Information on them disappears. It's gone. Because they don't want the public to know. Now, if this was a case where the Bigfoots had done this. And it's not me defending them, because trust me, I know just as evil as that some of them can be horrible, just like our people. It's not any different. There's good and bad and everything. Most of them are primarily very, very kind, but there are some that are just absolutely lethal. So and a lot of them are way up in the mountains like that, where they go up there to get away from people, and then people run up there looking for them. So these hikers are up there, and if they did encounter it, how in the world would KGB know about it? They're up in a mountain isolated with no way to communicate to anybody. So what brought the KGB in that night? A Bigfoot didn't get the KGB. And the photo that they had, this is what I found humorous, the photo that they had of what they called the snowman peeking out from around the tree, blow it up, lighten it up, it's wearing pants. So I don't know what that thing was, but it had on pants. It was really bizarre looking. It to me, that didn't look like any type of a snowman. But that's beside the point. if it was just a matter of they encountered the snowman up there, they had no way to get help from anybody. They couldn't contact anybody. There was no way the KGB would have been brought in because they wouldn't have had any knowledge of it. Let there be lights in the sky. Let there be a UFO. KGB will be all over that in a minute. Something brought the KGB in that night because when they actually located the site and got there, yes, there were prints from that looked like it was from a Bigfoot, but there were boot covers that were KGB issued. Not regular military, KGB. They're not just going to go up on that mountain where that was at that location for no reason. It had to be major.
I have a question for John. For somebody who's obviously has his finger on the pulse as far as the whole UFO phenomenon and agenda things going on. Back in the 90s, you know, when you watch a lot of these shows, abductions was such a big thing. Like there's these people getting abducted, and it was a reoccurring story that happened. It always was back in the past. I haven't heard of anything dealing with abductions in the last 10 years. Is there any like contemporary information about abductions? Is that something that's still going on? Is there still people reporting these? And, you know, with the reoccurring story kind of with the Greys and this genetic agenda and this, that, and other, is this still something that's going on, or was that something that happened in the 80s, 90s and really is not a thing these days? Do you know anything about that?
That's really an astute observation because as into this as I am, I never stopped to think, why are there not as many abduction stories as there were back in the 90s and the 80s? So now you've got me thinking about it, and I wonder, I guess there's one or two possibilities. One, maybe it got oversaturated in the 80s and the 90s, and people just aren't as interested in it anymore, so they don't blow this stuff up. Or what might be even weirder is what if they stopped happening? Like, you know, some people say that the ETs and the government had an agreement about abductions and how many people they could abduct a year. Like, what if the agreement ran out? Oh, so that's right? Okay. Wow.
That is actually very correct. The problem with that was there was two agreements. There was the one that Eisenhower signed, and there was one prior to Eisenhower. And anybody can go on Google now and look up the one by Eisenhower. His granddaughter has made it public, and she's now going to conferences talking about it.
I know her, the granddaughter of Eisenhower. Yeah, Laura Eisenhower, correct?
Yes.
I believe her name is. Yeah.
I have a conference I'm doing in Nebraska, and one of the members of the team for that conference knows her and was going to see if she would consider coming. I don't know if she ever asked her or not. But anyway,
I'm friends with her on Facebook. I'm friends with her on Facebook.
Are you? Yeah. Well, prior to Eisenhower, there was also an agreement. And it was all for technology. That was the whole purpose of it. Unfortunately, the first agreement that they made was not with a group of ETs that were actually good. And the government was so hot to get their hands on the technology, they did it. But the only condition our government had was the people don't get harmed and they're returned and they have no memory of it. And on the ET side, it was, one, you are never to disclose that we exist. And the other one was that they could keep people if they needed to. And my understanding is that they argued quite vigorously about, you know, you can't keep them or whatever, and there's supposed to be a certain amount of people they could only take. And anyway, they were dealing with a very bad group. And they just simply did whatever they want. And the government didn't really, I mean, I'm not going to say they didn't do anything about it, but they were fearful of the group they were dealing with because they were, at that point, they were taking whoever they wanted. And so they kept the secret because they were afraid not to. And then you fast forward to Eisenhower, and then Eisenhower signed a treaty as well. I mean, we've been being sold to the ETs for a long time. As far as the genetic program, the people that I know, the contacts that I have, and that I don't know everybody on the planet. I'm just telling you, you know, from the people I know and my own personal experiences, it is alive and well. They are still doing the genetic breeding program. There is, I don't want to say his name because that's not fair to him, somebody that is regularly abducted. And the last time they took him, they simply explained to him how they do the genetic manipulations.
Interesting.
And I was getting abducted. It's happened my whole life. I mean, when they took me when I was 4 years old, and that was in 68, they told me that wasn't the first time I had been taken. And this has gone on literally my entire life. They tried to, I mean, literally suck me up into this ship while I was wide awake, and that was back in 2013. And it's happened since then, but I'm just saying it's never, I don't think it's, in my opinion, and I don't know everything, and I certainly don't claim to be an expert or anything like that, but in my opinion, from the contactees that I work with and have contact with and have who contacted me, this is still going strong and it's getting worse. Now, as of 2 years ago, the one group said that we had not seen anything yet as far as what kind of things they're going to put on this planet. And they crossed them with cow's blood as well as our blood. And the reason they're using cow's is they claim that when they mix it with ours, it makes it easier to manipulate. Yeah. You know, these things are very real. I mean, I get contacted by people a lot. I have a very dear friend of mine that lives in Florida that's been an abductee his entire life. In fact, he has an implant. I know multitude of people that have implants. You know, I mean, it's just really incredible. You know, I've got something in my ear that I can't get out. The doctor can't get out. The Bigfoot say it's an implant. I don't know that it is. But what I do know is whenever we're going to have a lot of UFOs around here, it hums and then it drains. And it's consistent with every time. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm not going to say it's an implant because I don't have any proof that it is. But what I will say is that it's perfectly fine, and then when the UFOs are around, I get a humming, and I get pressure, and I get drainage out of that ear every single time.
But, John, is there any, things that you can think of, contemporary that deals with abductions or firsthand ET experiences that is part of the new kind of, developments or experiences in the field, reports or anything?
No, and I think my problem is I've been sticking my nose so far into the past for knowing nice books. We've just been zeroed in on that and haven't even thought about but you are right. I don't hear about abductions as much. I mean, I believe what Robin said. I just mean, they're not publicized anymore.
Yeah, I don't think people are talking about it like they used to. I know the people that have contacted me are like, why bother? Because as soon as we bring it up, we have the Men in Black at our door.
Well, I remember back in the 90s, there was always shows always on TV about abductions, and it always seemed like in the 80s and 90s it was such a big thing with the reoccurring abduction stories and things,
yeah.
And it's not something I hear about anymore, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah, I think, the Men in Black have a lot to do with that because the people that I've talked to, and it doesn't mean I've talked to everybody, it's just people I have talked to that are aware of the situation or have had it happen to them, they don't want to mess with it. They don't want the government interference.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be ridiculed. I don't think that it's that, it, in my opinion, is only just that. I don't think it's gone away. I actually think it's picked up. I just don't think people are talking about it anymore. I mean, back in the 70s and 80s and even in the 90s, the ridicule people got when people found out about it. I didn't talk about all my experiences until probably the last 4 or 5 years. Because who wants to be ridiculed and treated like a freak?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's going to believe it. And nobody wants to, nobody's going to believe him anyway. I think with me, I just got to the point where I thought, I just don't care. The truth is the truth. I can't change it. My stories never change. It's the same thing.
What comes to mind to me is was it a phase that happened and it was kind of because there was movies out and everybody kind of had this kind of all kind of a phenomenon at the same time, whether it was their imagination or they're making it up, or was there something going on legit during this time that stopped? Or you're saying that it's still going on, but it's just not being disclosed to the same extent. So I'm wondering.
Well, I think too, when they used to talk about it back then, they really not romanticized it, but it was like the way they presented it was like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. And you see all these people that would go to Roswell and they're out there going, come and take me, come. You know what I mean? And you see all these people on the news. and everybody was so excited about it. It was like the greatest thing in the world. And nobody was talking about the psychological damage it does to a person. Nobody was talking about the physical damage that does to a person. It was romanticized to be the coolest thing out there, and I think that made people talk about it more. But then I think as time went by and the Men in Black became involved and people were being treated poorly because of sharing that experience and then the psychological effects of what they'd gone through, and I just think people went quiet.
I think there's some phases that happens too. Like I remember about 10, 15 years ago, like a big phase was this like starseed phenomenon. Like everybody's from this like starseed thing. Now I don't hear about that so much. I'm still in the same groups and things are still there, but it seems like there's some kind of phases that go on in the UFO
community. Yeah, I agree. I don't hear about those anymore either.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wow, this has been quite an illuminating discussion when we started talking about disappearances, John LeMay. And what I'd like to do, because we have about 15 minutes left, I would like for you to recap, kind of where we've gone, where we've come to, and where we're going to go from here. And if you don't have any answers, you're fine. But just what do you think about this whole disappearances thing and the excitement that we have generated about abductions? Because it seems like we're some of the last people talking about abductions, doesn't it, maybe?
Yeah, and again, like you said, just for a brief recap, in case somebody tuned in late, I've been talking about this Inuit village that completely disappeared back in 1930. I mean, not like the huts and everything disappeared, but like the people disappeared, and there's just no trace of them. And, it was a real article. There was a real Canadian Mounted Police investigation into it. And to this day, nobody knows where these people went. And the only thing really against that story is the fact that the author of the article chose to copyright his article. And that's very unusual for a, nonfiction, article. You don't usually copyright those. So that's the only troubling thing about that story. But otherwise, I believe that the most logical explanation for where they all went probably was like a mass abduction event. And, this mass abductions and people just completely disappearing, like Robin said, has been going on for just ages and ages. And I wish we could have talked a little bit about the Anasazi that allegedly nobody knows where they went. That's a tribe from the Southwest and New Mexico area. Have you all heard of the Anasazi, since we have some time left?
Yeah.
Yes. No.
Briefly.
Please tell us about it.
I can't remember much about them other than they predated most of the other Native American tribes, and they were thought to be like probably the builders of Chaco Canyon in northern New Mexico. And Chaco Canyon, can't remember all the details about Chaco Canyon, but it has like this really unique alignment with the stars. And it has a lot of those, I forget the technical term for them, but they're these circles within the buildings. And the Native Americans would say that's where they basically would claim that those were stargates, and that's where their gods would emerge or, come to and from. And, again, to this day, nobody really knows where the Anasazi went. It's kind of a mystery. And Robin, what do you know about the Anasazi?
Really not much, John. I remember hearing about the name and that they had disappeared without a trace. I mean, what I know you could write on the back of a pin, but I do recognize the name. And like I said, the only thing I ever heard was, that was another tribe that had absolutely vanished.
Another one that comes to mind too is like Mayan, like back in ancient Mayan tribes, they had these huge cities and pyramids and things, and it just seems like I've heard that they've just disappeared. Obviously, they were conquered by the conquistadors and whatnot, but I've heard things of where there's like ancient tribes that, like in the South Americas too, that just seem to have disappeared as well.
Yeah, and I think in each of the cases that I've personally heard, not all of them, but I mean the ones that I've heard, there was, like I said earlier, there was no trace. There was no evidence of them leaving. whether on foot, on horseback, wagon, whatever, they were just simply, there was no evidence that they ever left. All their personal belongings were left behind, everything that they would need to survive, weapons, whatever, everything was left. The only thing that wasn't left was their person and the clothes they had on at the time. You know, I mean, if somebody's going to leave, they're not going to leave all their clothing. They're not going to leave their weapons. They're not going to leave all these things. And there's going to have to be a way that they left. And there was just never any evidence of any form of them moving on. You know, and then again, if they're going to move on, why were their weapons not taken? Why was their clothing not taken? Why were not their, you know, bowls or whatever they used for day-to-day living? None of that was taken. It was like everything was there just as they left it. They were just all gone, and there was no remaining people.
I was going to throw it out there. Is it possible that some of these cultures or tribes reached a state of maturity or whatever else where they kind of transcended this this world? Maybe it was abduction, but maybe they were, you know, being watched and things. And once they've reached a certain state, they're extracted, and then everybody else here on the planet still kind of waiting to graduate, so to speak.
Anything is possible. I don't think we have any way of knowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, nothing, there was no evidence of anything in a lot of these cases. So I think we would be remiss if we didn't look at all the possibilities.
Yeah. Rather than the most normal possibilities, which are not always true. That's interesting.
Right.
Well, John LeMay, I say we can't thank you enough for joining us. You have
we always
have
love it when you're on,
back,
John.
John,
well, I
you
always
brought
love
about
being on.
More,
so thanks all for having me.
You've brought about more interesting conversation this time, I think, than ever before. And I wanted
to
thank
really
you
good.
Very much. And John, what are your latest couple of books so that we know what to do at Amazon?
Yeah, for our listeners, I'd say UFOs in the Roaring Twenties is the one that's going to be of most interest to them. And then apart from that, if you all like the old Pink Panther movies with Peter Sellers, those comedies, I also did a book on those, and nobody's ever done a book before on the Pink Panther movies. So if you're a Pink Panther fan, I just did that as well.
Oh, cool. And I would really, after Dr. John sends you those photos, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Type in Amazon. Him, so they'll find your stuff. So we just type in John LeMay. We'll find your stuff, right, John?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yep. On Amazon, John LeMay, LEMAY. You'll just find a whole author's page full of all sorts of weird stuff. So
it's great. And I want to thank our ScaryCast panelists, the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McRae from Canada, our man in Niagara Falls, Canada, Mark Johnston, who's been all
Yay.
Over Canada, and Devin Tate. And I want to
Yay.
Thank all of you. And we've had the most fun. We always have a great time. Next week is our Valentine's Day special. Devin Tate, I'm going to have to talk with you on that because we've got to get your music back on. Are you okay with that?
Yep.
Yeah, and I want
good.
To get the link for that documentary.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And John LeMay, thank you so much. It was really interesting tonight.
Oh, it was a blast.
Well, that's great. And so,
and John, I sent you a Facebook. I sent you a Facebook friend request to add me if you like.
Oh, great! Thank you so much.
Yeah, I kind of looked at my phone while we were talking, and I saw that, and I thought, I didn't know Mark and I were already friends, but I saw your attachment, so thank you.
Yeah, it says I sent a request. Yeah, I don't think you've added me yet, so check up on that and add me if you haven't already.
Okay,
gone through
will.
That. Okay, cool.
So we're all going to be connected with John LeMay, and that's great. So, look, thanks, everybody. This has been a most wonderful next week, our Valentine's Day episode. That will be with Jen Cruz and the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McRae. The next week we will have We will have the king of New Hanover Tavern, Scott Dills. It'll be a lot of fun. And then just more stuff on ScaryCast. So we'll see you next week. And be sure
John, before
to
you pop off, Okay.
You did not get what?
I did not get the friends request because I'm under Robin Haynes McCray. If you send it to Robin McCray, I'll never get it.
Okay.
So when they sent it.
You told them. That's great.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
Sure. And we're going to have a great time the next ensuing weeks for the rest of time on ScaryCast. And John LeMay, you will be back, I hope, on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on March the 6th. And we'll have more great things to talk to you about, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll see you again. I'll do a call around to all of the panelists and our guests. So your phone will ring pretty soon. I promise you that. Thanks a lot.
Take care, everybody.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Everybody.
Good night.
And F. Loris Burke. And I can't thank everybody in. Don't answer it. It might be the Men in Black, okay? Cheers and take care.
For now.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
We're trying to end the episode, but the British lady may not come along for a bit. We're trying to end it. So everybody can hang up and thanks a lot. See you next. ScaryCast, 9 p.m. Eastern. Take care.